Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Hey, Giants fans. Welcome to another episode of Giants Talk. I'm Cole Kuiper, along here with Giants insider Alex Pavlovich, and we're ready to talk a little Giants baseball. It's been an exciting week. Giants D-backs, there's some wild stuff going on with the Astros and the Dodgers. Schedule was released, but first, I got to remind you that Giants Talk comes to you every Monday and Thursday right here on the NBC Sports Podcast Network, and it's brought to you by Wendy's. Right now at Wendy's, get two breakfast sandwiches for just $4. Later on this episode, we're going to be joined by Dwayne Kuiper, as we do every Thursday, but first, let's talk some Giants and Diamondbacks, because this was a kind of a crucial series in an interesting matchup because it's a team the Giants are going to face a lot down the rest of the stretch. Right, Alex?
Yes, good for them. They've won, I have to do math on the spot here. It was 9 out of 10 coming in the last night, so 10 of 12, I think. Is that right?
Okay. Yeah, so sure.
They beat them almost every time. I think I've said on this podcast before, if the Giants win the World Series, the Diamondbacks should get a ring because they're really helping them really helping them win the West.
That is some shade. We'll get to the Diamondbacks shade later. I actually put a segment in this episode where I'm going to throw a little bit of shade. So
just getting started.
We'll get to that. But let's talk game one first. I think the big story out of game one was Alex Dickerson, who with the roster crunch coming up is a man who was really looking to have a good series. Had himself a good series, and that grand slam couldn't have come at a better time for Alex Dickerson.
He really needed to go to Arizona. We remember his Giants debut, of course, the six RBI, and he's had some good games there ever since. Just likes hitting there, and it was. I did look this up before the series opener because it is getting pretty tight with the roster, and he does not have enough service time to say no to a AAA assignment, and he still has an option remaining. So technically, could have been on the board, but they really want him to get going. They want his left-handed power bat. They have seen what it's capable of. And, you know, he said he stepped in the on-deck circle on Monday night and all of a sudden just felt it click. And I asked him, I was like, what do you mean just it clicked? And he's like, just my feet, like the angle of my legs, just something worked. And I think he backed it up because he not only had that home run, but hit another one off the wall. Then had a pretty deep sac fly left on left that was important, and then hits another home run on Wednesday night. So, yeah, something clicked. And it is very, very – we've seen this for 2 years. When Alex Dickerson's going right, like, it's a game changer for these guys.
Yeah, this is just complete slander, but the first thing that popped into my head is, like, Clay Thompson. You know, when Clay Thompson is on, he's just on. And Alex Dickerson is no Clay Thompson. Don't get in my mentions coming in
to me
about
quote,
that.
Though. They're
exactly.
Both, I think they're both, you know, pretty funny, pretty laid back guys. So that's not a bad comparison, actually.
They're fun guys to have on the roster. So the Giants won that first game 11-8. It was a fun game to watch. Not so fun, though, was, the Jay Jackson story. By the time you're listening to this podcast on Thursday, it's probably been discussed to death. But Jay Jackson revealed some racist social media messages, the kind of things he gets as a black athlete after a game like he had. The Giants did end up winning the game, but he had just some horrible things in his DMs. We got to shine light on this kind of thing. People doing this is unacceptable. Our podcast producer, Brandon, owes me a favor right now, so I'm going to cash it in and just say, like, those guys, that is uncool, and, you know, we got to do better as a fan base and eradicate that type of thing.
Yeah, I would say hopefully nobody that listens to this ever does anything like that to a player. But also, if you know anybody who does, just educate them, I guess, you know, just because I think we all have some friends who are a little crazy sometimes, and hopefully are not sliding into DMs like this, but I think that's part of it right now. Just educate people and make sure people know that it's just not okay in any respect. I'm glad that Jay brought light to it. I'm glad that Gabe Kapler amplified it and continued to make it a bigger deal and was open talking about it, even talked about it after Tuesday's loss when he was asked about it. And certainly they've done a really nice job of it, but just, you know, don't be doing that. It's obvious, but sometimes people need to hear it, and it's just quite frankly, it's just losers on the internet, but don't be one of those people.
And not like, even the horrible racist stuff aside, don't be the guy who just tags a player on social media to bring them down after a rough day.
Don't even do that in the first. Look, I mean, I'll just, there's something I, there's a lot wrong with this. The one thing I will say, having been close to the situation for a decade now, is that these guys take it harder than anybody. They, you know, I've watched Santiago Casilla. I've watched Sergio Romo. I've watched Trevor Gott and Mark Melanson. They take it harder than anybody. It is their career. It's their livelihood. It doesn't matter if they're making $500,000. It doesn't matter if they're making $16 million. They are going to go home and they're going to be thinking about this all night and into the next day. So you do not need to remind them. You don't need to tag them on Twitter. You don't need to tag them on Instagram. You don't need to be in their DMs. You don't need to remind them because they're going to be thinking about it until the next time they get on the mound.
So just that had to be discussed. We'll move on to game two. And this was the big main event everyone wanted to talk about. Bumgarner v. Cueto. And Bumgarner was the Bumgarner we loved. Unfortunately, he was just wearing the wrong color pajamas, Alex. Was it weird for you seeing him out there with fans in the seats and, you know, this red hot Giants team facing him compared to last year's just kind of a matchup that was kind of forgettable against him?
It was really forgettable to the point that I completely forgot about it. I had to go look up what happened. I actually thought of you in the late innings because I think this was your dream scenario that Bumgarner goes out and pitches well.
And then they blow it?
Close enough, and then they go out and blow it. And it looked like they might do that. We've seen the Diamondbacks bullpen over and over again. So it was potentially a dream scenario, but I think it was a funny night for Giants Twitter because I didn't seem to see like a lot of angst. I think people were happy to see him throw like that. I was happy to see him throw like that. I'm a little bummed that he's doing that in front of 8,000 fans. Like I was hoping they would find a way to deal him at the deadline, just given the fact that he's thrown a little bit better and starting pitching was such a need. But I hope this offseason they find a way to trade him somewhere. Somewhere that needs Anaheim, maybe, like somebody who needs starting pitching and is going to play in big games. Like he does not need to be, he still is capable. We saw that he still, when he hits his spots, he is capable. And the Giants threw a good lineup out there against him. He doesn't need to be doing that for a team that is 35 games out of first place. I want to see him competing.
Let's not forget, this is a man who threw a valid no hitter this year, Alex.
Yeah. No, he has had some stretches. I mean, he had it like a 6 or 7 a month there where he had a whip that was like historically low and has thrown very well since he came back and thrown very well in the second half. And again, like the Giants, you know, they threw out like their A, except for Buster Posey, that was their A lineup against the lefty pretty much. And he made pretty quick work of it.
He did. It was good to see him. Kind of weird to see him with short hair, to be honest. I missed the long, like, stringy John Wick hair that I'm used to him having.
Did you see the post-game? They had, like, weird lighting, and it looked like he had purple hair. It's on my Instagram page, Pavlovich NBCS, but I think I had the same thought as a lot of people. It looked like he had purple punk hair.
Oh, I'll have to follow you, Alex. I didn't know you had. I'm kidding.
I'm hyping it out there for other people.
Fair.
Because I thought it was funny. And I know some people who were watching that too were very confused because it looked like he had purple hair, but definitely short hair.
Well, speaking of pitchers who pitched that night with great hair, Johnny Cueto was on the mound for the Giants. Didn't quite have it. The start before that, he had been absolutely electric, but he's kind of been off and on, hot and cold. And you know, it wasn't the Cueto v. Bumgarner matchup I was hoping for, but I am glad in the end that I think those guys got to face up against each other because, like we discussed going into it, he was really one of the only Giants players Bumgarner really had a relationship with that ended up playing in that game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Posey didn't play, Yaz didn't play, Crawford didn't play, and I mean, Yaz played one season with him, but even somebody who knows him a little bit. Belt's on a rehab. Longoria's not there. So it was, I was happy that it was Cueto. It wasn't quite, I think if Johnny were feeling it a little bit more and gotten a rhythm, we would have maybe had a moment or two where we got to laugh, but instead it just became watching Madison kind of mow him down.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier how I was hoping for Bum to pitch a gem and then the bullpen to blow it. The Diamondbacks brought in a guy in the eighth inning that was a little bit interesting. Tyler Gilbert, I believe his name was. It was his first MLB outing, and he grew up a Giants fan. His sister, according to the broadcast, works in the San Francisco Giants front office. And I think the Diamondbacks kind of did that to take the wind out of our sails as Giants fans, so we couldn't root super hard against this guy and root for a comeback there. So that was a clutch tactical move by the Diamondbacks.
Could you imagine being somebody who grew up as a lefty in the Bay Area and probably grew up watching Bumgarner, and you're tasked with trying to save his what ended up being his first win against the Giants? Like, they put him in a tough spot there, and he handled it extremely well.
Yeah, I hope Bumgarner gave him some sort of prize, a Ford truck with technology and stuff or something. Yeah, there we go, half of one. But it was a pretty cool moment for him, and, you know, always good to see a Bay Area kid do well in the big leagues. Although, I don't know if kid's the right word. I think he's one of those journeyman minor
leaguers.
He's like
29, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I still feel like a kid, and I'm like 55, Alex. Yeah.
We're still kids.
We're still kids at heart. The other thing no one could stop talking about in game two was the quote-unquote catcher's balk. And I believe it was decided that it's not technically a catcher's balk. That's just what we're all going to call it for the next time being. I don't think we need to harp too much on that, but we'll get into it with Dwayne Kuiper later on to see what he has to say.
Yeah, I want to talk to your dad about it, because John Miller had the rule out after like 3 minutes, and Jeff Kuiper, your uncle, had it on the screen, so they were ready to go. I was very impressed. I want to talk some broadcaster rule book, how that all goes down.
Maybe that's a new topic for Conspiracy Cole, that was planned, and Jeff Kuiper was in on it to get it up there and ready.
Cole-spiracy?
Cole-spiracy. I like that. The last topic for game two I have written down here is that Gabe almost got tossed. I would like to ask you if you have a little more knowledge, maybe from an interview I didn't see after the game, or what Gabe was after here, because it didn't look like that was a hit by a pitch that he was arguing for. Kind of seemed like he was just arguing to get the team fired up and maybe freeze out the pitcher. What was going on there for Gabe?
Yeah, I think he was so they thought he was hit, and then the umpire said, hey, look, Darren Ruff's back in the batter's box. The pitcher's back on the mound. It's too late for you guys to ask me to review this. And my understanding is that they asked the umpire to then check to see if it was actually too late. And that's what they did. I don't think they ever actually checked the play. It seemed like they checked.
Oh.
They could review it and said no. It was like 6 minutes of back and forth. This is poor kids on the mound. I don't know. It was... We could cut a lot of baseball out, I think. We could get rid of these mound visits when a pinch hitter comes up and the pitching coach runs out to tell him who Darren Ruff is, who Alex Dickerson is. We could get rid of those. I think we could get rid of some of these arguments that are lasting forever. I mean, the umpires gathered twice as a group.
They did. It was so weird.
And this is a very pro Giants coaching staff podcast. We've had them on the podcast. We talk about how good a job they do. They do really love to do the old, is there anything here that can help us? Like, can you guys all get together and see if there's anything? And Kai talked about that when he was on here. Like, they're just looking for it, which is fine. I wonder if at some point the umpires start being like, hey, get back to the dugout. Like, we're not here to just try to find loopholes to help you guys. So they do love to have those arguments late in games, but maybe one of them will work one day. I don't know.
I kind of feel like they had annoyed the umpire so much that even if the call like did get a chance to get reviewed, they weren't going to give it to the Giants.
So we thought they were reviewing it, and I was sitting there thinking like, he's got to be on the headset talking to the guys in New York saying, even if you see this, like, not overturn this, because I've been arguing with Kapler for 5 minutes. So
exactly.
There's no way they're going to overturn that.
I kind of thought Kapler might get thrown out. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, or if you don't know the answer, someone will correct us and tell us we're idiots. But I think he's only been thrown out in one game as Phillies manager, the one that kind of went viral thanks to John Boy, where they did the lip reading on it.
He hasn't done it here. A good question next time we have him on the podcast.
Yeah. How do you stay so... even keeled out
there. He does. He's like, you can tell he's like fired up, and you can read the lips a little bit, and there's some words we can't say on here because you already used but you can tell, but he stays calm enough that he doesn't get tossed. So that was one thing that stood out in that Dodgers series. I don't know if we ever talked about, but Dave Roberts was like losing his mind and was
– He's
like, I'm going to get tossed in 0.5 seconds. And we've seen when Gabe's angry, he does a really nice job of keeping his composure. But I wonder if he will get to the point – and granted, he's had a lot of success with the Giants so far, but I wonder if he does ever feel like there's a point where he needs to get tossed to fire up the troops. I don't think he's that type of manager, but
– I don't.
You know, maybe it was five in a row or something like that.
I was watching the game with my friend David. This is kind of just like a perfect segue. And we were kind of talking about how Bumgarner was such a hothead. And we felt oftentimes forced to defend things because Bumgarner did them, despite like them being
We've talked about how Max Muncy won that. And
Exactly. And we kind of were discussing as we watched the game how refreshing it is not to have any players on the team like that right now. Like, I'm not watching a game kind of rolling my eyes like, oh, do I really have to go defend, Brandon Belt for mouthing off against a pitcher? No, the manager's not getting tossed. None of the guys are doing stupid stuff. It's quite nice.
Who's most likely to get tossed on this team? Ooh, I have a surprise answer for you, but you can.
All right, hit me.
Austin Slater.
Oh yeah, he was pissed. When he gets and that a, ball was not ball close the other three, night.
He is fired up.
He got a called strike three and a ball that was like well inside the strike zone, and he didn't stop talking about it for like half an inning.
He was. Do you remember? I mean, he was right last year at the end of the season with the Padres.
Well, yeah,
he was losing it from the dugout, rightfully so. I think.
Slater I think he stewed on that for the entire offseason, Alex.
He did. He went back to the dugout rail and was holding his hands up. Like, it was this far. I think he might be my choice for next Giant to get tossed from a game.
That's a great stat or a great prediction. If anyone has any other predictions, let me know on social media because I want to hear that. But let's talk a little game three. Game three was more exciting. It was a real neck and neck close ball game until all of a sudden it wasn't. Before the game, Tommy La Stella was activated. Desclafani went to the IL with shoulder tightness, I believe. If you're watching the podcast, there were some air quotes around that. But the big takeaway pitching-wise is that Gausman was back.
Yeah, he looked good. And I don't think his splitter's back, but his fastball has good life right now, and he was able to ride that. Looked better. You know, my one concern, and we had Carmen on the post-game show on Tuesday, and she asked what the weakness is right now. And my one concern is I do think we saw the Dodgers and Astros look really comfortable against some of the Giants pitchers who we feel good about. And the Dodgers in particular, and a team that they're likely going to face at some point. So, you know, you want to see Gausman do this against a better team. But look, right now they have the Diamondbacks on the schedule, and they have him coming in again next week. I think he will face him. So a good chance to work on your mechanics and get right and get ready, because you're going to have the Dodgers again. You're going to have the Astros potentially if you go deep into October. And those lineups have looked extremely comfortable against some Giants pitchers. So, but a positive step, certainly. And the DeSclafani thing sounded like a very minor, you know, a little fatigued. He hasn't been very good the last couple starts. And just a chance here with an off day and the way the schedule broke and the fact that they have Aaron Sanchez in their bullpen to give him a little bit of a break and hope that he gets right. Remember, these guys, I mean, he is at about 100 innings more than he threw last year already. So these guys are headed to kind of uncharted territory. And it's a little bit concerning for the Giants, I know. And I would say that the silver lining is that Logan Webb looks fantastic. So they have that coming on the back end. But the front guys need to get going here as we get into September.
Yeah, these are all problems. I don't know if the Giants coaching staff expected to have at this point in the season. So I'm sure they're excited to even have to be having this discussion.
Yeah, those guys were all trade candidates. So
yeah, I think one of my preseason predictions was that one of their starting pitchers would not be a Giant after the trade deadline. And I'm very glad that was wrong.
We were wrong about a lot.
You were so wrong, Alex. All right, going down the rest of the big events from game three, you already mentioned Dickerson with another home run, three-run home run that, you know, just attaboy Dick. Keep it going. Love to see on the team. Solano was the hot bat. Home run in the fifth. And then RBI in the sixth just really broke the scoring open, and the Giants just kind of took it away from there. Posey had a huge RBI down left field, and Posey could have had a much better game offensively if it weren't for some incredible snags by Nick Ahmed of the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, he's really good. When I know people in San Francisco were pissed when he took Brandon Crawford's gold glove, but he is really good there at short. We should touch on Solano, though, because there was a stretch, you know, a week ago, 10 days ago, where you start looking at this roster crunch and start wondering, like, are they better off with Estrada and Flores and Tommy La Stella? Is their middle infield group there with Crawford and Solano? Maybe he saw that coming. Maybe he knew there was some pressure on, but he's been outstanding the last 4 or 5 days.
He has been. I think it was either game one or two of the series. Mike Kuko just straight up said Donnie Barrels is back.
Yeah.
On the broadcast, and I'd love to hear it. Donnie Barrels has been an exciting part of the team the last few years. And, you know, him operating at full capacity is what the team needs. But one of the names you just threw around there for the middle infield was Tommy La Stella. This was Tommy La Stella's re-debut, his rechristening as a San Francisco Giant, I guess you could say. And yeah, he had himself a nice little game.
It was a reminder that he is the person who has the biggest contract, you know, years-wise, given out by Farhan Zaidi, and at least for a hitter, is the most significant move they've made before Chris Bryant. And they really believed in him, and it has not gone well, either on the field and then with the injuries. But he's a good player and somebody they really thought could help. And I think he's going to be, you know, we'll see what he does going forward. But I think in particular, he's going to be really helpful late in games. Like, that's a bat you want up there when, you know, the homer dependent crowd that gets a little annoyed. Like, this is somebody who does the other thing. Like, this is somebody who's going to grind and can get a runner in from second base in the seventh inning.
Oh my gosh, Alex, that's music to my ears. That's what I needed to hear. A single with runners in scoring position. Can it even be done?
When we get a sack fly, people would lose their mind.
Lose their mind. I will say, I think the MVP of the game, though, it's between Kevin Gausman and Ella Tarantino. Did you see Ella Tarantino on the broadcast? That little girl sitting.
She ended up everywhere.
Her life's not going to be the same. She's going to be like the redheaded kid with the mullet, who's like a Barstool correspondent now because he was on TV at the Giants game.
Yeah, that guy's life has changed a lot in the last month. Her too. I thought it was cool. Like, school starting soon, right? So she's going to go back to school. And can you imagine the first day of school coming off of that? Like,
oh, she's riding high. Family goes to
now. And what's she, like, 7, 8 years old? She probably has a cell phone. She can just show people the video.
Oh, yeah. Her like hidden Instagram that her parents don't know about is blowing up right now. She's loving it. Yeah. Tarantino family apparently are Giants season ticket holders, and they went on vacation to Arizona before school started. And the rest is history. Ella put the whammy on the Diamondbacks, and I would say, I'm sure there's some sort of sabermetrics to back this up, that she single-handedly got Gausman out of that jam when he needed her. You know, the two-handed whammy.
Can we get her to, like, a Dodger-Padre game, though? The Giants don't need help against the Diamondbacks. Like, we need her in October.
Are you kidding me, Alex? You know how the Giants marketing team works. She's going to have a regular seat in the 415 section
for a World Series game. She's
100%. She's got a world to fit her for a ring, dude.
Her and Alex the Bunny are going to be side by side on the field.
Yeah, actually, I talked to the people at NBC. I'm actually hosting this podcast with Alex the Bunny next season, not you.
That's a lot of free time for me. So good luck with that.
All right. I mentioned this earlier. I did want to touch on this. I don't mean this with any great disrespect to the Arizona Diamondbacks. I do not hate the franchise. In fact, of all the teams in the National League West, they're probably the one I think about the least in terms of negative opinions. I'm just truly neutral. But do they have the worst branding of any team in baseball? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, their colors are horrible. Teal, like electric blue, that weird, like dark red. Their name is super weird. D-backs, like, rhymes with D-bags. And it's like a nickname for rattlesnake that, like, nobody uses. I was too young when they became an expansion team to really care about this. I don't know if people were having this discussion then, but super weird. Their uniforms have always been terrible, as long as I can remember, from the tank tops to the weird colored ones they have now, to those like ones that had scales. Yeah, the purple stripes. I don't know what is going on over there in Arizona. And again, I do not mean this like mean. It's just like, what is going on, guys? Tighten it up.
I think the meanest thing you said was when you were like, I don't really think about them. And you know, now that you bring all this up, it's funny. You have a huge section here in our notes of complaints about the Diamondbacks. But there was one that this used to drive me nuts. They would, you know how ballparks do the thing where you can hashtag something and it ends up on the scoreboard? Mm-hmm. And their hashtag is Go D-backs, but they would not like capitalize anything. So it would, on the scoreboard, it would say like God backs over and over again. And it just, it drove me nuts. I was like, just capitalize the G and the D and just make it a little bit more, I don't, make it clear. Yeah, it's a weird, it's kind of, I think it's like a franchise that doesn't really know what it is. Like, I don't know that they have an identity. They really need to hire like a Rays executive and have them come in and turn them into a small market, like, I don't know, feisty team that is always better than you think. I just don't really know what their identity is. And I think even the ball, I actually like the ballpark. Like, it has really wide concourses, good food, pretty fun place to watch a game, really good sight lines there, but it fits like 55, 50, it fits a lot of people. It's huge. It's a huge ballpark and they don't draw anybody. So it's just a very strange place to go. And it's always empty. It's always 110 degrees outside and then, you know, 76 degrees inside. I agree with you. I don't think they have the right vibe.
Yeah. They could be doing much better. It's always weird for a franchise when the best piece of like apparel they have out there is their City Connect jersey.
Yeah, that's not a great sign. They just need to stick with something too. Like, they have they change it up every year. And remember when they looked like garbage men for a year? Like, it was,
yes,
it was, yeah, just find something that works and stick with it.
Yeah. So best of luck. Godspeed, Diamondbacks. We're rooting for you. Godbacks.
Godbacks.
I think you wanted to give everyone an update on my future as Conspiracy Cole a little bit, right?
Yeah, I want Conspiracy Cole to be a regular character. First of all, great suggestion by one of our followers, Kaylani, who said it should be Colespiracy. I agree with that. That's got to be a segment. Maybe on Summer Sundays, you need to debut this. But
actually been pitching, one of my Summer Sundays hosts is Carmen Q, K-I-E-W, and I pitched a Q Anon segment, and I got denied.
That's maybe too far. Yeah, but Colespiracy, I think, could get by the censors. But you brought this up last week about how you thought Max Scherzer just straight up said no to the Padres, and that was your,
I still do,
your Colespiracy. So I don't know if people saw this, but Ken Rosenthal, obviously, he was the one who had him going to the Padres. He wrote a little bit of a mea culpa, but also a little bit of a, you know, trying to figure out what was happening in there. And one thing he said is, he thought another possible factor, this is from Ken, another possible factor was that Scherzer had the right to block any trade as a player with 10 years of service, 5 consecutive with the same team, and he and his agent, Scott Boras, might have preferred the Dodgers. Ken's obviously very plugged in. Ken was the one who was he's never wrong, but he messed this one up. And so I think maybe you were a little bit onto something, potentially. One to watch. You know, these things tend to get out at some point, especially when a guy becomes a free agent. So,
all right,
keep an eye on.
We're going to keep our ear to the ground on this and see if Colespiracy was correct. And if this is going to be a reoccurring character, I'm going to have some bigger picture, just real out there conspiracies for you guys. So here are a few I cooked up to see if these are just out there enough for Colespiracy. First off, the Oracle Park Seagulls are giant surveillance drones to get footage of the other team.
That would be pretty good. I wouldn't put anything past this current staff. They're exactly watching everything.
Whatever it takes. Number two, there's a Nessie living in the cove. Maybe it feeds off of home run balls.
I feel like it would have gotten a Dave by now.
There's a blurry photo out there somewhere, just like the real Nessie. And number three, this might be my wackiest one yet, is that Barry Bonds was blackballed from baseball and could have continued playing as a home run champion.
That's a good one. That is that was potentially good. Not wrong.
That's all I got. That's all Colespiracy's got. All right, let's move on. We have another topic before we bring Dwayne Kuiper in, and that is the Giants 2022 schedule was released. Alex wrote an article about this. You can find on nbcsports.com/Bay Area/Giants. I could read the rest of the article URL out, but I'm going to skip that and trust you can find it on your own. You want to run down any big highlights of the schedule you mentioned in the article, or you want me to just pick some fun stuff out?
Well, I'll tell you my highlight that I didn't even mention in the article and I realized afterwards is that the Giants have four games in San Diego to start the year, a weekend in San Diego to start the year, which is great. And then I realized this is like the beat writer mind talking, that opening day is always a day game, which means a 1 o'clock game and you have to be there early, which means I get to go to San Diego on Wednesday night and spend that night in the gas lamp. So I'm not hating the fact that, you know, the 2022 baseball season is going to start with me in San Diego from Wednesday potentially through Monday. Not bad.
What's your tin fish order?
Shrimp tacos.
Shrimp tacos. All right. Well,
yeah, every time.
I'm already thinking about putting in a PTO request and booking a flight for that same period of time, Wednesday to Monday. So I will have some shrimp tacos.
I think we need to build up all the goodwill we have with this podcast over the next 6 months and just be like, can we tape it live opening day?
Oh, so what a great idea.
From the tin fish.
I'm in. We'll make
this. Keep subscribing, happen. Keep downloading, keep leaving good reviews so me and Cole can go to the tin fish next March.
Fantastic. All right. Beyond the opening day in San Diego, Giants open at home against Miami the next weekend.
We should mention Giants on the road the 13th consecutive season. I know it drives people nuts. They asked for that. They prefer to be home at the end of the year. I do wish one year they would just slide in a home opener just so people would stop complaining. But then it could be like 19 of 20, but it's 13 straight next year.
It's tradition at this point. Let's ride it out. The All-Star game is in LA and the Giants play LA immediately following the break. So any and all Giants All-Stars have a nice little week there that they can just extend their travel plans. Kind of cool.
And hey,
Giants,
the World Series manager gets to manage that game. So potentially.
Wow.
We'll see. I know Dave Roberts has already talked about how he wants to manage that game at home, but. Just
get out of here, Dave.
Keep an eye on. And also,
not happening
about that. The Giants and Dodgers open on that Thursday night, the second half, and they're the only teams playing. So that'll be a second opener. It robs them of a day at the All-Star break, but a fun game.
Yeah. That's fine. I'm excited for that. And I think this was the thing that stood out to me as the weirdest part of the entire 2022 schedule. The Giants are ending on the road and at home against Colorado and Arizona for two straight weeks. That's four series against Colorado and Arizona to end the season. If there's a pennant race, you know, a NL West race going on, that's going to be a meaningful 2 weeks.
I've never seen that. Like, it's absolutely bizarre in the first place. And then to have it be the two teams that are probably going to be in fourth and fifth in this division next year, probably distant fourth and fifth. Like, that's pretty nice. And it's something I think to keep in mind. We should remember this throughout the season next year. I mean, look, this whole team's going to be free agents. We have no idea what 2022 is going to look like. But if they're like a little bit out of the race over the course of the season, I think we can always look to the last 2 weeks and be like, well, I mean, they can always win almost every game for the last 2 weeks, potentially.
Yeah.
Have a nice little run there.
All right. So I brought this up with my dad on the phone this morning and he was like, why are you thinking about 2022's end of the season race? We haven't even gotten to ours yet. And I was like,
came out on a Wednesday morning in August for some reason. So we have to
just think. We got to create some content, Dad. We're trying our hardest out here. A few other potential road trips that stood out that I thought were worth mentioning. The Cleveland Guardians in April. I think this is the first time the Giants have gone to Cleveland in years. So that was my hometown.
One of two parks I haven't been to. So
there we go. Alex, you got to go to Cleveland. It's the best. Yeah. You know, I moved when I was two and I'd never been back. That's how great it is.
You're really selling it.
There's a Miami weekend in June. That's probably going to be a lot of fun. and a Chicago Cubs weekend in September, which I know Chicago is always a big popular road trip destination for Giants fans. So check out some of those. It's going to be a great season. But which of the road trips for you, not just one city, I'm talking multi-city stands, from an Alex Eats perspective, is most exciting?
There were two trips that stood out to me, or two parts of the schedule that stood out. First, my fiance is from DC and then went to NYU and spent a dozen years there. And there's a New York Washington trip, which was very convenient potentially. So I was like, little Robert, do you want to go on the road for a week? So we'll see about that. But the other thing that stood out was just, obviously I started looking ahead to the food, and there's parks that I haven't been to or haven't been to in a long time. Haven't been to since we've been doing Alex Eats. And so I had to look up their menus and found a couple. Detroit has an egg roll stuffed with hot dogs, chili, mustard, and onions, which sounds disgusting, but also sounds right up my alley. In terms of
Alex Eats. That sounds like something at like Arby's, dude, or Applebee's, I mean.
Yeah, it was really, that one jumped off the page. And then this was the one that stunned me, and I feel like I have to go to Minnesota now. The Twins have a stand called Hot Indian Foods Chana Masala, and it's just an Indian food stand at Target Field, which I don't think I've ever seen Indian food at a ballpark.
That's incredible.
I love Indian food. So
I might have to go just for that too. Yeah. I love Indian food. I've also never seen it at a ballpark. Fantastic.
I've never seen it at a ballpark, and I would not have thought that Minnesota would be the place where I would see it. But
yeah,
that one I couldn't believe. So I might have to go to Minnesota now.
All right. You know what? Now I'm rethinking whether I do opening day in San Diego with my wife, or if I drag my wife to Minnesota to have Indian food at a baseball game.
It's a tough call there. Tough call. It's a
tough call. All right. Let's jump over to Dwayne Kuiper to talk a little catcher's box, Bumgarner, and all other fun topics as we finish off the longest episode of Giants Talk of the season.
Graton Resorting Casino is your destination for 24/7 fun. Experience luxurious rooms, award-winning dining, world-class spa and salon, and the best gaming and entertainment around. Visit GratonResortCasino.com to book your 24/7 fun.
All right, Dwayne Kuiper, it is a Thursday, so always good to talk to you. I see you're pumped up. We're pumped up to talk to you. Something happened last night that immediately was on everybody's mind and has to be the first topic here. We saw it wasn't actually catcher's box, but it was introduced as a catcher's box, which I had never seen before. I'd never seen anybody actually do that before, what Casale did. And then like an inning later, John Miller is reading out of the rule book and actually seemed to have the rule, or I don't know if Jeff Kuiper or somebody in the truck got it for him. But that led to my first question. How well do you guys as a broadcast team know the rules, and how much do you have to go and look at something like that every once in a while when there's a play that we haven't seen before and you guys are trying to figure out, just like we are at home, what just happened?
Yeah, I rely on Mike a lot because I know he reads the rule book. I've sat next to him on the airplane and he's got the rule book out. I can't. I get a headache.
It's very dry.
I mean, the plot's terrible. And I know how it ends. So I can imagine the umpires are just like going crazy. But, I mean, they have to know it all. I have seen that play before. And I actually played in a game. And I don't remember who did it. I don't remember what team, where the second baseman actually took his hat off and took the ball. Grabbed the ball with his hat and moved it towards the base. And it created all kinds of, you know, guys got thrown out of the game and because nobody had ever heard of it before. So that's how I was introduced to that rule. And I saw Cole tweeted out that I had actually mentioned him the rule when we were watching The League of Its Own. And I didn't remember that. He does. But it is obscure. But it happens. And just about the time you don't think something like that's going to happen, it definitely is going to happen. And it hurt the Giants. It did. I mean, Madison Bumgarner was not going to score from first on Asdrubal Cabrera's base hit. So it hurt him. And it's unfortunate. But I'm glad in a lot of ways it happens, because now people have an idea that there is such a rule, and those things do happen. You know, I watched Caselli. He did not look at his mask when he covered up the ball. He kind of looked away just as he covered it up. So I kept thinking, well, maybe there's not intent there. But it sure did look like afterward that there was.
Yeah, that first thing that came to mind was you explaining that to me as a kid. I think we were watching the movie A League of Its Own, and there's that scene where they're just kind of showing off to put fans in the seats, and she catches a ball in her hat. And that's kind of like a go-to baseball movie thing, especially for comedies, like catch the ball in your hat. It's fun. And I always remember that, you telling me, no, you can't do that. That's an illegal move. I'm sure you didn't call it Rule 503 BC or whatever it was, no. But that's one of the first.
Very
there we go. That's one of the first obscure baseball rules I remember as a kid. So well, thank you for that knowledge.
Yeah, well, as Alex was explaining, when John started explaining the rule, I got a headache then. And then, you know, those things just never go away. Then the next inning, somebody's got a different version of the rule. And afterward, I don't want to hear about it anymore. I mean, it's let's go. Let's watch Chris Bryant, you know, try to get a base hit. Let's do that instead. But it became a big part of the game. It really did.
Before we got on this, I did a little research online, and the Dodgers have won on a walk-off catcher's balk, if that's what we're going to call it now, whether that's actually what it is or not, in like 95. Lasorda came out and explained it to the umps, and they had to award him the run in like the 11th inning.
Good. That's how the game should end, with a balk, catcher's balk. Killing me.
This happened a couple weeks ago, actually, something similar. Not obviously a catcher's balk, but the Cody Bellinger play. And there was some confusion in the Giants dugout about the runners being moved up. And Dave Fleming actually went the next day and caught the umpire crew as they were walking onto the field during batting practice and said, hey, guys, we were curious about, you know, that net that there is now. I mean, it goes all the way down to the pole.
Right.
There's some parts where there's gaps for players to sign autographs. There's some parts where there's no gap. So he was asking about the ground rules. How often do you during a season talk to an umpire or talk to Eddie Montague or somebody and just have something clarified? Because it does seem like a lot of these things are changing every year. I mean, the Giants have changed center field. They've changed the foul lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're really fortunate that Eddie is around, where he comes into our booth and, you know, and unfortunately for Eddie, and we're talking about Eddie Montague, the former umpire and a good one. A lot of the times he just gets hit over the head with a bad call that somebody made the night before. And what we try to do with Eddie is we try to compliment the umpires if they did a good job, so that he's just not constantly getting berated over a mistake or over a pitch that was that far outside and was called a strike. So Eddie's been really great with us. And a lot of those ground rules, you know, you're right, they did change once they put the netting up. I didn't even think about an overthrow that would hit the net. I just assumed that it was going to go into the seats, because it would have been another run for the Giants, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And in the ninth inning, that would have been a big run. Turned out they didn't need it, but still. So, you have to really be careful with the ground rules, because, you know, look, at Candlestick for 20 years, the ground rules were exactly the same. Nothing changed. But now with the netting and some of the other things that the Giants have changed at the ballpark, you do have to refresh yourself, because otherwise you're going to get caught. And it's bad if you get caught.
One of the big stories other than the catcher's block from Wednesday's game or Tuesday's game was Bumgarner facing the Giants again. Unfortunately, not at Oracle Park in Arizona. But I know Bum is one of the guys you were really close with on the team for the past decade or so. Is it weird for you to see him face off against the Giants? I know we saw it last year during the COVID season, but it's still a little weird for me.
Yeah, no, it's definitely weird, because you know all of his mannerisms, from when he takes his glove off, he puts it underneath his arm, he gets sweat from his forearms, he rubs up the baseball, he does all of these things, and we've watched him do it for such a long time. And it's for me, it's difficult to cheer against them, even though I did. You know, I absolutely did last night. And I texted him this morning. I called him a rotten son of a gun. And then I said, well, I said, really, I'm just kidding. And I told him, I said, it was worthy of a Wisconsin Kringle, because every time we would go into Milwaukee, I would buy at least a dozen Kringles.
Yeah.
And I had them split out so that, you know, these the relievers were going to get some, the infielders, the coaches, the manager. And then I would have like a dozen of them. And Bum would go, I need four. I said, Bum, who do you need four? He goes, I need them all for myself. And I want four different flavors. And he was really adamant that he got four in four different flavors. So he's on my Christmas O&H bakery list. And maybe I'll send him one, maybe not. But he did pitch a good game last night. I mean, they hit some balls hard off of him. But he deserves a lot of credit.
You would always
I haven't received a response. I have not yet received a response.
That was going to be my question. You would always bring one of those in the press box, and I would try to get to it before Henry got to it and have some of that Kringle. But I wanted to ask you, do you talk to him much? He's not a big texter. And not, you know, I know in the offseason, guys would joke, like, no chance. He's going to go back to North Carolina, and he'll be up in the hills, and you have no chance of reaching him. How often do you talk to him?
You know what, Alex? I don't one time last year, I texted him, and he called right away. And he and Allie were in the car somewhere, and, you know, they just wanted to yuck it up and, you know, poke fun of whatever was going on. But he's not, he doesn't really talk a lot on the phone. I think it's maybe two times I've actually spoken to him on the phone, but he will eventually get back to you if he likes you. If he doesn't like you, you have no chance. You have no chance of hearing from him whatsoever. And he will probably tell you that if he doesn't like you, then get rid of his number. The one thing about Bum, and you know it, is there's nothing fake about him. You know exactly where you stand with him. And if you stand on the right side of him, then you're going to get a lot of good information, and you're going to get you're just going to get a lot of stuff from Bum that is fun. But if he doesn't like you, forget it. He'll stuff you in the garbage can.
I'm somewhere in between get a text back and lose my number. So I'll take that. Yeah. I'm in the middle there.
Well,
so
that's just because of what you have as a job.
Yeah.
I mean, if your job wasn't being a reporter, he probably would like you very much. I know he would.
So this is the first time we've been able to talk to you since the beginning of the Chris Bryant era of the San Francisco Giants. Are you happy with what you've seen so far from the man himself?
Well, look, he's got a home run, right? He's got an infield hit. He's got a day off. So I'm a little disappointed. I expected more like three home runs and two line drives to left. But overall, I'm thrilled that he's on the team, and I think everybody else is too. Plus, you know what? It looks cool. Like, we know he's a five-tool player. We know what those five tools are. But it looks like he's got the sixth tool, which is he likes to have fun. He looks like he's got a great personality. So that's like two more tools, and he'll do interviews. So that's like eight tools. So I'm all in favor of him not just being here for 2 months, but being here for another 4 or 5 years. So hopefully that'll happen. But he's a good ad. He really is. It's going to be fun watching him the rest of the way.
I told you this already, but the first time I talked to him was on our Summer Sunday postgame show, and he said, you're great to me. So he's earned a spot in my heart forever based on that alone. I don't get many compliments like that these days.
Well, when I saw that, Cole, when he said that, I didn't know specifically. I'm glad you told me that he was separating you from the other group. So he specifically meant you were great, and those other three he's got to warm up to yet. So that's
a great point. Yeah, no, the you was probably more of an ustedes than me in particular.
I don't know. I'm going to go with what you said. So that's actually pretty good. But I thought his interview with you guys was great. I thought he showed a lot of personality, and when you're the new guy in town, you want to show some personality, and he did, and I think we're probably going to see that a lot.
Yeah, he warmed up to the city quickly, and it seems like Giants fans warmed up to him. So we're excited.
It's going to be a good marriage, Cole. And hopefully we all have a really wonderful ending. And he's a big part of it. And I really think he will be. He's just an extraordinary talent. And he's going to fit in. It looks like he's already made a number of terrific friends. And let's hope it has a really great ending 4 or 5 years from now.
Dad, you and I were talking about this the other day, and I thought it warranted bringing up because it might not be something a lot of Giants fans are quite attuned to, but one of your mentors is Hank Greenwalt, and his kid does games in the minor leagues. And I believe he's coming up to do some radio for the big league squad this weekend, correct?
Yeah, Dougie Greenwald is going to do Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on KMBR with Randy Wynn. John's on assignment. And Dougie's been doing play-by-play in Fresno for a long time. I mean, he's probably close to somewhere between 15 and 20 years. And he's done a couple of games for the Giants. We had a game in Milwaukee. I don't know if you guys remember the ball game where they did the big blow up at home plate after extra innings. I think it was 13 innings. Doug was the only guy that was happy to win 13 innings because he got to do them all on radio.
Yeah, so, I remember Zito plunking Prince Fielder in spring training the next year.
Yeah, Zito did it with his 42-mile-an-hour fastball. I figured Prince Fielder was going to catch it and throw it back at him, but he didn't. So anyway, Dougie's going to do these four games, and I have a lot of affection towards that whole family. Of course, you know, Hank passed away a couple of years ago, but his mom, Carla, is still alive. Kelly, his sister, is still alive, and I do, and I'm hoping that he just does an absolute terrific job because he's earned it. He's done it a long time. And I'd like to see him get a shot.
We were obviously super close with the Greenwald family when I was a kid. But back when you were beginning your big league broadcasting career, is there any advice Hank gave you that you want to pass along down to Doug?
Well, Doug got a lot of advice from his dad when his dad was alive. As a matter
of fact, that's true. I'm sure he did. But more for our podcast listeners.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about Doug is now that his dad is gone, he gets to be his own self now. I mean, he needs to establish Doug Greenwald and not live in Hank Greenwald's shoes. But Hank was tough. I remember one time we were working and I was just starting out, and we were doing a game at Wrigley Field, and we were on radio. And I said to Hank, I said, "I don't know, Hank, would you hit run here or would you bunt?" And literally, I thought I called him a really bad name because he stopped what he was saying. He looked at me, and he said, "I don't manage. I broadcast." And I was like, "Oh, sorry. That's never going to happen again." And it never did happen again. Because he just didn't want to be second-guessed. And he didn't want to second-guess what the manager was going to do. So anyway, in preparation, if you didn't prepare, he would let you know that he did not think that you prepared enough. And so you had to come into the broadcast booth prepared. If not, you were going to hear about it.
I'm very happy for Doug. He is one of my favorite people that I've met doing this, and certainly very deserving of getting this opportunity. So that'll be fun, and I look forward to listening to that. I'm going to finish with this. We're going to go around the league a little bit, and Cole and I are paying very close attention to these Astros and Dodgers games. Me for entertainment value, Cole, because I think he's just rooting against everybody on the field in that series. But
on and off the field, Alex.
Yeah. It's been a little crazy, and it's going to be crazy again tonight. It got us thinking, what is the craziest environment that you have been in as a player? Was it in the big leagues? Was it in the minor leagues? Was it somewhere in winter ball? Do you remember anything that could match what we've seen at Dodger Stadium here?
No, I don't think I ever played in an atmosphere where there is that much hate. And, you know, and hate's a really bad word, but
I think there is.
In a sports sense, that's kind of what I got listening and reading about what was going on in L.A. last night. So I know the answer is not no, but I did play in some great environments in Venezuela where every game was a party and every game was the seventh game of the World Series because there's a lot of gambling going on and, you know, a lot of, you know, fights in the stands because those cities in Venezuela are all pretty close. And it became like a high school environment where, you know, Montevista's playing San Ramon. The towns are really close. But really at a much, much different level where there's lots of alcohol and a lot of things going on. And it was fun. I mean, it really, really was fun. As far as in the big leagues, you know, Yankee Stadium is the one place that you could get in the on-deck circle and you would find out that these Yankee fans had actually done their homework. They knew your mom's name. They knew your sister's name. They knew how much they weighed. You know, they got really personal. And you had to be really careful that you didn't want to go into the stands. Because, you know, that's the one rule. You can get close to going into the stands, but you can't jump in. So that was always tricky. And I think the Candlestick crowds against the Dodgers, there were some Friday nights. We had a Friday night doubleheader when I started out broadcasting. That was a disaster. There was a fight every inning, people getting escorted out. And I don't really like those crowds are no fun because they're dangerous. And I don't really particularly like the crowd last night in L.A., and I'm not going to like the crowd tonight because I think at some point what they're doing to the Astros needs to stop. I heard Joey Votto today say, everybody thinks the Astros were the only team doing it. They got caught.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, I'd like to see it end because whatever people are doing to the Astros, it's not working.
No.
It's not. I mean, they unloaded on Altuve in the first inning, and all he did was bang a double off of Walker Buehler. That's kind of what's going on.
We saw him.
Oh, man, that first pitch, though, he almost hit that first pitch out. That was a loud foul ball, and that would have silenced that ballpark like none other.
And then it probably would have got worse.
It would have got worse.
I mean, if he hits one out on the first pitch, it's going to get worse. So I hope at some point it really stops. I mean, look, they got the one manager that is going to handle this the best in Dusty. But it's going to get bad again tonight, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I was seeing online videos of fights in the stands, people throwing stuff. It was getting rough. The comp I had there that I could think of is 10 Cent Beer Night in Cleveland. I think we've mentioned this towards the beginning of the season on this podcast, but that was the year you joined the Cleveland Indians. I believe it was a few months before you came up, though, right?
Yeah, but it was a big story. You know, it was a big story when I got there. And every time the Giants played the Rangers after that, you know, there was always this tension, like, is it going to happen again? But I did not witness it, but it was a bad, bad scene. The only thing that was great about it is those two teams hated each other, but yet when the fans came on the field, they kind of united to protect each other. And that was the one good thing that came out of it.
Well, it's only love on this podcast. Always good talking to you, Dwayne.
Bumped.
We will see you next week.
Plus, I had my afternoon Hunter Pence coffee. I'm ready to do 20 more minutes.
I can tell from the beginning you were ready to go. All right, see you, Dwayne.
All right, guys. You bet. Have a good one.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.